having me.
Now, how significant is the environmental destruction that's occurring around the world?
Well, it's hard to say that because no one actually looks at the figures of what's actually occurring in terms of the environment during armed conflict. But we certainly know that the environment's been attacked throughout history when it comes to armed conflict. You know, we have historical examples of, you know, Romans having scorched earth policies, poisoning water sources, salting the earth. And obviously there's been things like attacks on dams during World War II. The use of nuclear weapons have a huge impact on the environment. So it is very widespread.
Absolutely. What legal protections are already in place? What protections are we seeing around the world?
So basically there's sort of two forms of protections. One, we have a few specific provisions expressly mentioning natural environment in our laws of armed conflict, including the Geneva Conventions. And then we have general principles. With the specific provisions, they're very, very limited. So we do have it in the Rome Statute and what's known as Additional Protocol 1 to the Geneva Conventions. In both of those, the language is that states are prohibited from widespread, long-term and severe environmental destruction. And that is a really, really high threshold. All three of those elements have to be met.
Wow. So do we not see then, I guess, prosecution when environmental destruction does take place?
So at the moment, we've had none before the ICC. So in terms of it being a recognised war crime, there's been none. Though, to be fair, the ICC has had very few cases at all. Historically, there were a few cases at Nuremberg where they looked at scorched earth policies and held some generals accountable for that, but it's been very, very rare. And the threshold's so high, it's very unlikely we'd see many prosecutions ever.
No, I can't imagine anyone really meeting that extremely high threshold.
No.
So what can be done to better regulate these crimes that are taking place then?
Well, as you mentioned when you opened the section, you said the open letter called for a whole new treaty, a new Geneva Convention. And that's what the scientists were calling for. That is an option, but it would have to be done very, very carefully. It's two very complex areas of law, international environmental law and the law of armed conflict. And to actually be effective, it would have to create really strong protections, but it would have to be protections states are willing to sign on to. And right now, I don't think this is the right political or social environment for that. I don't think we're going to get that sort of agreement.
Mm. So what is the approach? Yeah.
So instead, I think we have to look to those general principles. As I said earlier, while we've got these specific provisions that are really high, we also have general principles governing the law of armed conflict. Things such as the principle of distinction, that civilian objects should never be targeted and the environment is a civilian object. What we need is more clarification on how those general principles apply in relation to the environment.
Mm, and whose responsibility is that? Who does that fall on?
Well, I think that would mostly fall to governments and militaries themselves to actually think when they have, all states have military manuals, which give guidance to their militaries on how they should interpret the laws of armed conflict. They should take time in those manuals to actually look at what this actually means in terms of the environment. The International Committee of the Red Cross also has a big role to play and is currently actually redrafting guidelines on this particular area.
Wow, that's amazing. That's fantastic.
Well, it's obviously going to come down to implementation and whether or not they actually comply with what they look at. Mm. But it is hopeful to think that we might get something new.
Is there anything, this is such an interesting thing to consider when we're looking at our everyday lives and we're looking at the ways that we practice kind of civilian participation in politics. Is there anything people can be doing in their everyday lives? Are there petitions that should be signed? Are there governments that should be pressured? How can people make sure that their voices are heard in this issue? Is there a way?
Oh, that's a very interesting question.
Yeah.
Civilian protesting doesn't tend to have a big impact on how our militaries operate, unfortunately. But it's definitely something people need to be aware of and pay attention to.
Mm.
Historically, I mean, where we got these big protections that I've been talking about, despite how high, you know, the high the threshold is, that was in response to Vietnam. So that was the world watching and being horrified by how much environmental destruction happened during the Vietnam War.
Mm.
More recently, it was the Gulf War and the setting the oil fields on fire. When the Iraqi forces left Kuwait, there was a lot of attention to that. So So I suppose that media attention has brought pressure, and that is public pressure. So I think it is that role of condemning when we see it happening.
Absolutely. Shireen, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there, but thank you very much for joining us this morning and explaining some more.
Thank you for having me.